My name is Carolyn Large, and I'm a grateful recovering member of Al-Anon. Hello, everybody. I want to thank Milton and the board for asking me to speak. It's good to be back at Mount Eagle. It's been a lot of years, but a lot of memories. One of the things I think about is how different I am today than when I was here in the, must have been the late 1960s and early 1970s. I've heard it said, I'll probably ramble here for a minute, but you know, I've heard the expression, words are cheap. And actions, you know, speak loud. And I hope that today I may say a lot of words, but I hope that the life I live speaks to other people as I go along in my life. I'm a member of the Joy Al-Anon group in Lexington, Kentucky. That is my home group. That's where I'm very active. I chair meetings. I sponsor. I am sponsored. I have a sponsor. I have a recovery sponsor. I have a service sponsor. And all of that is very, very important to me in my program. As I begin, I want to share a statement that I found in the One Day at a Time in Al-Anon that I think perhaps describes me as good as anything could, the way I feel today in looking back. And it says, I found I could no longer blame the alcoholic in my life for my soul sickness, my restlessness, and my feelings of inadequacy. I also say that I found that I could no longer blame others in my life for my soul sickness, my restlessness, and my feelings of inadequacy. I think my whole life has been in search of God, in search of a relationship with the God of my understanding. And I've heard it said that God, whose middle name is Surprise, has certainly done a surprising thing in my life in the way that He has led me to come to know a God of my understanding. And so that in essence is where I am today, still growing, still learning, still searching. I really have found the God of my understanding through these fellowships. And I just today continue to seek to do His will in my life. I grew up in Anniston, Alabama. I'm the oldest of four girls. I really grew up in a female-controlled household. And that's carried over big time in my life. As far as alcoholism is concerned, I did not grow up in active alcoholism. In fact, my family, from what I could see, my immediate family, those closest around me, were teetotalers. There was a great fear of alcohol in our family. The word alcohol was not in our vocabulary. certainly not the word alcoholism. But I do know today, in looking back, that we were very much affected by the effects of the family disease of alcoholism. My grandfather, my mother's father, committed suicide when my grandmother was pregnant with her fifth child as a result of drinking. And as life went along, you know, this family woman, my grandmother was, you know, had five girls. And then I came from a family of four girls. And it was a family, and we loved each other, I know, but we didn't show the love. We didn't put our arms around each other and say, "I love you." Those were words that I didn't really hear until I got to this fellowship. I never remember hearing my mother or my father say, "I love you." So I never really remember hearing that. And it was here that I learned to say, really say, "I love you," to know what that fully means, more than words. We were a family that they never talked about this grandfather. And if I ever talked, when I came to realize, just a little bit about that situation, we never really talked about it, but if anything was, my grandmother lived all of her life committed to my grandfather. She loved him, she was committed to him, and if you ever entered into a conversation with her about him, she would explain that that if he drank whiskey, you know, he went crazy. She would say that it was the other people, the other fellas in his life, who brought this about. So these were the things that I learned growing up. And as I said, you know, there was no alcohol allowed in our family. Regarding the spiritual part of my life at that time, my family were not churchgoers. They went to church from time to time. I knew that they believed in God, but they didn't go to church on a regular basis. My grandmother, after my grandfather died, she worked in a cotton mill. I'm from a cotton mill family. I'm from a cotton mill community. And most of my family at that time worked in that cotton mill, retired from that cotton mill, as did my grandmother. I spent a little time working in the cotton mill a little later in my life myself. But they were hardworking people. They were good people, but they didn't go to church. But as far back as I can remember in my life, there was something in me that wanted to know about God. And I have memories, you know, of just seeking that out, of going to church. Sometime a lot of other people took me to church. So that was the way it was. And when I was in the fourth grade in school, my life changed. Our family life changed drastically. My mother developed cancer. She was pregnant with my youngest sister. My father lost his job. We lost our home. We had to move. And during that year, I remember we moved about four times. And the last time we moved to government projects, and so that's where I lived until I got married. Well, when my mother got sick with cancer, and having four children, the youngest one just a baby, and times were so difficult financially, and they were doing all they could, I know, to make ends meet. For some reason, I don't remember really having any real relationship with my mother and my father. And I was allowed to go and come as I pleased. And so by the time I was about 11 and 12 years old, I was really, literally, you know, all I remember is I was able to go and come pretty much as I pleased. And my mother was becoming sicker and sicker in her disease. And so when I was about 12 years old, as I said, I could go and come. Nobody really asked me any questions, so forth. And so one night I went down to, I had to ride the bus. We didn't have car, we didn't have telephone, we didn't have TV in my family. And so we rode the bus, and I rode the bus with some friends, and I went down to a dance in downtown Anniston. And at that dance, there was a young man there that I saw, and I really talked to personally for the first time, although the family had been acquaintances of my family. I knew about this family. Because his brother, in fact, had lived with us for a brief period of time when he married a friend of our family's, and I knew that William, the brother, drank. And I remember one time when he came into our house drinking, and I remember my mother went to the back of the house to she did not want to be around this. And so when I saw John, and John paid attention to me, you know, I loved it. And what I realized, I didn't think about it at the time, but John was drinking that night. Now, I was somewhere around 12 years old or so, and John was probably 16. And John asked me, you know, as we talked, you know, he asked me that evening if I would go to a movie with him the next day. And, oh gosh, I was flattered. You know, here I was, this 12-year-old. I mean, I shudder to think about the children I have now, my grandchildren, and how I lived my life. But I went home, and I really wanted to go to that movie. And so I prevailed upon my mother to let me go. And my mother was sick, her resistance was low, and she couldn't, I know, resist a 12-year-old girl in puberty, you know, wanting to go to a movie. And when I told her who it was, I know she resisted probably as long as she could, and then she said, Carolyn, she said, you can go downtown and you can meet him. Now, see, nobody ever told me things about how you did things, about protocol, about, you know, a man meets a girl and they should come and call and come up to the door and knock and pick you up, you know. I lived a life where, you know, if they came up and blew the horn, you know, you ran out. And I don't know how they do it today, but that's the way I did it then, because that's all I knew to do. Nobody had ever coached me in any of this. And so I went down, and she said to me, you tell him that this is just a friendly get-together. And, of course, I did not tell him that. And to make a long story short, I was with him as much as I could be during this next year. Now, he was already, from my perspective, a full-blown alcoholic. He had already left home at that time. He was on his own, and he lived with others who were addicts and alcoholics. And so my life began. I began to be with him, to go with him, to be where he was. Nobody ever really questioned me. I was still in school at this time, and sometimes I would play hooky, and I would leave, and I would go to meet him. My mother died on March the 29th of 1958, and another thing about me is that I began early in life to push things back, to deny my emotions. I never felt any emotion. When my mother died, I don't remember ever crying or grieving over my mother. I was into myself. I lived in a fantasy world. I was a voracious reader. I read all of the romance books. You know, at that time in our life, you know, you could buy those magazines, and they would be full of these romance stories, and it was boy meets girl, man meets woman, and then there's this difficult situation that goes on, and then they come together and they live happily ever after. And that's, in my mind, that's where I was. But down here, it was a different story. But I didn't live down here. I lived up here. And so, in May, following my mother's death in March, John called me one day. I guess I have no real significant remembrance of it. But John called me and asked me if I wanted to get married. I didn't think about it. Didn't think about what's going to happen. I didn't think about, well, do you have a job? Do you have a car? Do you have... nothing ever registered on me. And I can't explain that today, except that I was in a world of my own, a fantasy world, and searching, and so he called and he asked me this, and I said yes. I know I said yes, because I made up some story and told my father, who was, my father was working the second shift in the cotton mill, and my three little sisters were there, and I have no idea. I couldn't tell you today who took care of us or anybody. But I knew that I would do this, and I concocted some story to my sisters and told them that probably I was spending the weekend with a girlfriend. And I got a little bag packed, and I rode the bus downtown, and I walked over to the cafe that his aunt owned, and he had conscripted a couple of fellows to drive us across the line, the Georgia line, Georgia-Alabama line. And I remember that day. I remember that I knew that they were drinking, all of them. I never drank, but they were all drinking. But none of that didn't register on me, didn't bother me. So we went across the line, we got married, we came back. And then it was the life of what happens in active alcoholism. This is what happened in this life. I remember coming back. We got back that night. We went down to the Oxford Lake. Some way or the other, he disappeared. I was so clueless. I was so naive. Then he showed back up. Then we went and had the, quote, honeymoon night. Then I went back home. nobody ever knew. But about a week later or so, my sister next to me, we had never had a relationship, a real good relationship, this sister and I, you know, there was always some conflicts between us growing up, and because we were so different. I was really, you know, I hear alcoholics talk about the, you know, feeling different, and I was different. I was very different in my family. And Judy told me, she said, "Carolyn," she said, "I know you're up to something." And she said, "If you don't tell Daddy, I am." Well, that got my attention. Because I had never been close to my daddy. I feared my daddy. My daddy had never, I do not remember ever receiving any whipping from my daddy. But he was not in our life. You see, my mother, she controlled everything, you know, the children and all. And so I know that when my mother died, my daddy must have felt completely helpless. But this got my attention because I knew that my daddy could get very angry. And I already knew how he felt about John. Because he had already gotten wind some time back that I had been seeing John one time, and I remember that he let me know that he didn't like that very much. And so when Judy said this to me, and I knew that it was going to happen, that she was going to tell Daddy, I immediately ran to my grandmother's house. Now, my grandma's house was always that place, that secure place. You know, it was always the same. It was consistent, and Grandma was there, and I loved being at Grandma's house. And I got my aunt and my uncle, who were pretty close in age to me. They were. I got them to bring me back over to my. Well, I got them to go with me to get John, to bring him back up to my house, so that we could be there when my daddy got home from work that night. And Daddy walked in from that cotton mill at 10 o'clock, after he got off from work at 10 o'clock, and we were sitting there, and I told him what I had done. And Daddy said, this is all he said. He said, "You've made your bed, and you can lie in it." And we left. And for the next 3.5 years, I lived in active alcoholism. Many things happened. It was much of what happened. I initiated. I know all of you know the many things that we do and how we react. Didn't understand anything. All I knew was that if he loved me and if he loved his child, we had a son a year later. If he loved me, if he loved Danny, he wouldn't do these things. He could stop. Many times I initiated what happened. Sometimes I would call the police. The police would come, take him to jail. I would be right back down there getting him out of jail. Not pressing in any charges. I would fight. Sometimes I would get aggressive in my fighting. One time I remember, you know, just breaking a lot of dishes and picking up a piece and cutting it into his leg. It was that kind of a situation. Things that I'm not proud of. About 3.5 years, in around 1961, like I had done everything in my life as far as my brain was concerned, I made the decision to get a divorce. And so I divorced John. And my attitude was, when I divorced John, it was like I had done everything in my life. I shut everything away and I walked on. And I said, I don't ever want to see you again. And I don't want you to ever see your son again. And that was my attitude. And that's the way it was for a long time until I came to this program. That wasn't because John didn't try to make contact or to show some love. But it was because I cut those cords. The following year, I went to work in a cotton mill. I met my second husband, who was not an alcoholic. He was a great guy. His name was Jimmy. And Jimmy and I we married and in 62, and we had two more children, Henry and Angie. And then in 1967, Jimmy was killed. He was a firefighter in Anniston, Alabama, and he was killed in the line of duty in a freak accident. Following that, I really, all of the past caught up with me. Everything that I had denied, hid, everything caught up with me. And I was a basket case emotionally. Well, I began to do some things in my life. I quit the cotton mill. I went to a school to be trained to be a secretary, and I eventually took the GED test and then went into college. I later graduated from college, but at that time, I was just a mess, and I was searching, and I was being that stoic woman, trying to be with three children at 25 years of age. And one of the things that I should do would be to take my children to church, and I was in search of God, and so wanting to, as I said, this relationship that I didn't know how to get. It seemed to elude me. And so I was going to church. I was going to church very regularly, very active. And one night, in this Baptist church in Anniston, Alabama, we had a series of lessons. And I always bring, I keep this book with me. This is a Baptist training union quarterly. And it holds a lot of meaning for me. Because in this series, there was a series of lessons on alcoholism. Now, and it says in here that it gives you the resources. If you're concerned about someone with a drinking problem. Now, I had left that husband. I didn't seemingly have any reason for knowing about Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon. But when I was going through this, one night it hit me. Something hit me when it said, if you're concerned about someone with alcoholism, there are certain resources you can call on. And one of those it mentions is Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says in here, find Alcoholics Anonymous in your telephone directory. And that's what I keyed in on. I don't know why, except I do today. This has been part of God's plan for me. So that night, when I left that church, I went immediately home, and I picked up the telephone. And I called I looked it up in the telephone directory, just like they said. Didn't really know why, except I had this thing of that I could help. This thing of helping someone else. Never thinking that it would be all about me. It's all about me. I know that. But when I called the fellow on the other end of the line that answered, you know, I don't know what I said to him, but he probably picked up pretty quickly where I was coming from. And he told me when the open meetings were of Alcoholics Anonymous in Anniston, Alabama. Well, I went. As soon as I could get there the next week, as soon as that meeting was, I went by myself to that first meeting. I walked up the stairs. I walked into a room. People were talking. Everybody was talking. It was a smoke-filled room. People were laughing. I had never seen anything like it in my life. I looked around that room and I saw the steps. I saw the slogans. It was a club room. This was in 1968. I saw the pictures of that you see on the AA rooms, you know, of Bill and the man sitting on the bed, side of the bed. They opened with a serenity prayer. And a man spoke. A judge from Montgomery, Alabama. And he told his story. I can never tell this without just, it is so special to me. He said that he was an alcoholic. When he ingested a drink, he couldn't manage his own life. He didn't do the things that he did because he didn't love his family, but because he was alcoholic. They closed the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. My life changed. I left that meeting and I wanted to go out and become a missionary. I did try that for a while. It doesn't work very well. But I did. I went out and within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I had a person there over to my church speaking to them. But anyway, I learned that night my life changed. The journey began for me that night. I looked at that person in my life, I looked at John in a different way. People in my life who drank, I looked at in a different way. Because I had learned that alcoholism is a disease. And as we say in Al-Anon, the three C's, I can't cure it, I can't control it, and I can't whatever. So, I didn't cause it. I can't cure it. I can't control it. But we also say that I can contribute to it. But I learned that. And so my thinking, my attitude changed. Now, Jim, whom I'm married to today, and you'll hear tonight, Jim tells me that he was at that meeting, that first meeting I went to, but I didn't know that. We didn't meet until the next year. And from that time on, I began to go to open AA meetings. I loved it. But then as I met Jim, the following year I met Jim, and he'll probably share some of that tonight. And so when I met Jim, you see, I didn't know anything about Al-Anon. There was not an Al-Anon meeting in Anniston at that time. And Jim was in the fellowship, had been in the fellowship house in Birmingham and had come to Anniston as director of the fellowship house in Anniston. And when Jim and I started going together, I was introduced to people like Mickey and Jim Hawkins and others. And Mickey worked at the fellowship house in Birmingham. And so Jim took me over to meet Mickey. Now, as I would know today in thinking about a new person, you know, you already know what you're going to say and what they need. And so Jim took me to meet Mickey. And Mickey, knowing that we were, in a relationship and it looked like it was moving toward marriage, Mickey told me that day, she said, Carolyn, you know, I would encourage you to go to Al-Anon. And I, of course, told her that, you know, and she knowing that there was no Al-Anon meeting in Anniston, and she told me to start one. Now, that's pretty brave, telling somebody that knows nothing about Al-Anon to start Al-Anon, but, you know, sometimes we do those things, and I did. I did just that. I went over, she told me, to get with some of the others, and I did. And so we started an Al-Anon meeting in Anniston, Alabama, and I began to learn about Al-Anon. Now, I want to say this. My time's running out. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm one that I could sit and I could read your literature all day long. It is the most spiritual, God-inspired literature I have ever read in my life. I love the history. You know, the history of Alcoholics Anonymous is the history of Al-Anon. And so I think it's good to know our history. I love to read about, and I was reading in Lois Remembers, just refreshing my memory on how when Bill went throughout the United States in about 1950, and he was finding all these groups of Al-Anon, you know, were already forming, our people gathering, families gathering, and he came back and he told Lois that there was a need. And Lois was resistant in the beginning. She said that she was really having a good time just living the sober life with Bill, working in her garden. And she was resistant, but then she saw the need. How grateful I am that she saw the need and that she committed to begin with others to begin Al-Anon, because it has been a life-saving program for me. Jim and I today, and we laugh about this, you know, our marriage, we married in 1971, and over the years, it's been a struggle at times, probably more times than not, it's been a struggle. It's been a rocky road. It's been uphill. And had it not been that Jim had his program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I had my program of Al-Anon, we would not have made it. But because we've continued to go to our programs, and we've continued each in our own way to try to work our programs to the best of our ability, today it works in our home. Just, Jim doesn't even know I'm going to do this, but just to give you an example of a very recent event, you know, probably a week ago or so. My home group is the Joy Allen group on Sunday night, and 99% of the time I'm at my home group, and I believe in being at my home group and being committed to that group and putting my effort into that home group. But there was something else going on that I wanted to go to on that night. And I made the decision. You know, I've learned I have choices. This is a freedom, a real freedom for me, that I don't always have to do what Jim does. You know, sometimes we do things together. Sometimes we do things separately. And we're so different in our personalities. But I made the decision to go to this dinner. And I don't know what happened to Jim or where his thinking was, but for some reason, I think maybe he thought I was going to quit Al-Anon because I made that decision to go to this other thing. Well, that was concerning to me. I was concerned that he was concerned, but I wasn't concerned enough that I was going to change my plans. But the thing about it was, and here's how the program works. The following day, I think it was the following day, he said to me, he said, "You know, I want to apologize for that." He said, I overstepped my bounds, and that was none of my business. And I said, "Thank you." And we're able to do that today. My old Danny, who was a son by this first marriage, John, Danny, you know, my attitude had changed. And at a point in time, I've had to make some amends. I tried to make amends to John. It didn't work out just like I would have liked, but I did the best I could. Danny has seen his father, but it was years. It wasn't too long ago, too many years ago, that he finally came back in contact with his father one time. But Danny is also an addict. I don't know what his drug of choice is, but I think he considers himself maybe more an addict than an alcoholic. I don't know. But I haven't heard from Danny, although we live in the same town. I haven't heard from Danny in 6 months. But I did hear yesterday that he's alive and well. And that's always good to know. I was listening to Mike last night, and I thought about, and I think about today, what hope that gives me, what hope when I hear alcoholics give their story. The hope that I have, the hope that I see in Al-Anon, in recovery, the hope that I have for Danny. Because I have learned from you that as long as there's breath, there's hope. Danny's youngest son, Chris, who turned 16 in February, is also an addict. He's in a recovery home in Louisville, Kentucky, for teens. I keep in contact. We went and visited Chris a week ago, and I heard through his aunt yesterday that he's okay. I know he's got a long way to go. I don't know where it'll end or when or what, but I do know that he knows. He's going to many meetings with the program. He's been to many meetings. He knows where the help is. I know there's hope. I will share this before I close, that Chris's mother and Danny were in a relationship for a good many years. And they were living in Evansville, Indiana. This was 4 years ago or so, and they were into their addiction, into their disease, and so they were picked up, and Danny went to a year, he went for a year in prison, and Kathleen, Chris's mom, we were able to, especially through Jim's efforts, and talking to the Hope Center in Lexington, she was able to come to the Hope Center in Lexington, and got sober and straight, and then on the staff. And then 2 years ago, she reverted back to her disease, and she died. That was, again, another difficult time. There's not a day goes by, probably, I don't think about Kathleen. And Chris, her son, has had a difficult time in dealing with all of this, and now having had this disease himself, it's not easy, but again, you know, this program, thank God for the programs of Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and Al-Ateen. So today, I have a program that I love. I have a God of my understanding. My desire is to continue to grow in this program and in my relationship with the God of my understanding. I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And I desire to continue to carry this message to families of alcoholics. I thank you very much. I love you all.